Welcome to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I am your host, Anna Fulmer. Thank you so much for tuning in. We would love to hear your thoughts. Tell us what you think by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Good or bad, it just needs to be honest. Your reviews help keep us on the air. Now, without further ado, on to the show. Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. Today, we have Dr. Rob Kelly on the show. Dr. Rob is a world-renowned addiction expert who believes in treating the problem, not the symptoms. To date, he has helped over 5,000 people recover their lives from the disease of addiction, including celebrities in film, music, and sports alike. He is a frequently requested guest lecturer at high-profile universities and hospitals. Based on his own experiences working with addicts and alcoholics over the last 20 years, combined with a PhD in psychology and as a recovered alcoholic himself, he is a triple threat against the disease of addiction. Here to share his expertise and his story, welcome recovery expert, Dr. Rob Kelly. I already introduced you to my people here listening and watching. I loved reading through your story and just the progression of where you've been and where you are right now. But I like to press the rewind button a little bit and highlight your story that started at a pretty young age in terms of your personal experience with addiction. So I would love to hear that backstory, and I think it sets you up even more powerfully for your expertise, education, and degrees aside. You've experienced it. So tell us a little bit about your story.
So I'm from a musical family. I was on stage at 9 years old playing professionally with my auntie and uncle. So that's when I took my first drink at the age of nine in Liverpool, United Kingdom. Progressive illness, alcoholics are born, drug addicts are made. So from that first drink, there was a ticking time clock on me, which nobody knew back then, and some don't now. So yeah, it was kind of I wanted to be a pro musician through school. I played in bands and, you know, stuff like that. But I found that every weekend I'd be drinking. And then slowly but surely, you know, it takes its time. It takes its toll throughout 67. I went to college. I shouldn't have gone there. Just got it by a fluke of a Freemason friend knowing a Freemason. I always pretty clear about that, you know. But I got through college, but drinking all the time. And it was many years later that it finally brought me to my knees after I'd lost everything. And the reason why I'm here today or still doing what I do today is nobody had the answer for me. So I would go to my doctor and he would go, I think you're alcoholic, you should stop drinking. And I'm thinking, why can't I do that? Everything else was brilliant. I was playing at Abbey Road, which is a great studio in London, guys. Beatles played there. I played with David Bowie, Elton John. Did all sessions with them guys. I was the golden boy, you know. But I couldn't stop this drinking stuff. So it bemused me. So when I finally, you know, got on the streets and I came off, I swore to me that the rest of my life and God, the rest of my life, I would help people understand what they're going through. So when I first started this 15 years ago in America, it was purely alcohol and drug addiction. But now it's 10% alcohol, drug addiction, and 90% childhood trauma, performance coaching, all the great stuff that gets people from A to B. Like, I've just lost 150 pounds over the last 18 months, you know, because
congratulations.
I want to get back. I mean, at the age of 60, everyone said it's all over for you, kind of joking. And I said, you know something, I'm going to get back in shape like I did when I was 18. And everybody laughed. But with the neuroscience and mindset that I have and teach, here I am, you know, weighing in about 210 pounds and 360 pounds almost 2 years ago. So it emphasizes, like you said, it emphasizes like, hey, I'm teaching this, but I've also been through it. Because my education is awesome, don't get me wrong. But that's 3% of what I do today. The 97%. Mm-hmm. Is my experience going through it and coming out the other end.
Yeah, let's tap into that a little bit more, because I agree with you. I think experience is perhaps our greatest life teacher, whether it be for ourselves or then for other people. And one thing that I think is really powerful to hone in on when we talk about the addiction piece, but this can be true from an inward standpoint as well, whether it be a mental disease or a addiction to other things. Addiction, we often think of outward substances, but there's other things and other ways to be addicted. Like you said, it's almost more of a mindset than it is a physical, very specific physical aspect to it. But you went through college as an addict. You went through, you saw, like you just said, you saw a lot of success despite the fact that you were living addicted to, in this case, alcohol, I believe you said. And you still hit all of these outward markers of success. So playing devil's advocate, I would suggest, or I would ask, why bother changing the addiction? Because you still had success in all of these other ways. What was it in your life? Even then, you lost everything at one point. But there's a lot of people who are at that stage right now when they haven't lost everything yet. And life is still okay. But what was it, looking back, that you were feeling that could have been better? That person who is still experiencing success, they're still making a lot of money at their job, their family hasn't fallen apart yet, but they are in the throes of addiction. What is it that they are feeling that they might not even recognize they could be experiencing so much more if they intervened in their addiction?
When I came around and looking at, you know, the neuroscience and the diseases as a whole, like you said, all addictions, cake, food, porn, sex, it makes no difference. It's an addiction. The only addiction that differs is alcoholism, because the three parts of the brain differ from any other addiction. But the addictive personality is what most people suffer from. There's a fine line between alcoholism and heavy drinking or abusing. It's hereditary. I'm allergic to ethanol. But what you have to remember is I have that addictive personality, addictive mind, that I either do something or I don't. So what alcohol has 1% to do with alcoholism. And when I say that, people go, oh my, yeah. And the same with drugs and anything else. It's only the symptom. It's not the problem. You see, the problem in my mind is my mind wants to self-sabotage all of the time. So, you know, I get the car, I get the house, get the wife, and then bang. I go out for a month drinking a bit, and it just repeats. It's called the basal ganglia in our brain. It's a repetition, strength, and confirms, usually for good, but in my case, and anything with the addictive brain, it's for bad. So at a certain point, I'll bring everything down on my head and start again, which I have done 3 times, by the way, because of my past. But yeah, I mean, you take the alcohol away, you're still left with me. You take the drugs, porn, food, you're still away with me. And one of the reasons I turn to drugs or sex or porn is because I can't stand myself. I hate myself. Mm. Learned behavior and enmeshment from caregivers, from my childhood trauma, which is the gateway drug, by the way, guys, performs and sets my life out to always go down this path of self-sabotage. So even though we take that away, if nothing changes, then nothing changes. Because you will go on to relapse again. And most people are walking around about 45 to 50% of their capability and capacity. And what I mean by that is everyone's addicted to something. Everybody has an addiction or a self-sabotaging pattern that they follow. So when they get to a certain point, they cap themselves out and then they, you know, they self-sabotage and they break up relationships and work subconsciously. So they're not aware of this, but they always come back. And sooner or later, if you do have an addiction, like I said, all people have one, find out what it is. If you don't address that pertaining as well to the childhood trauma, then you will always be in this pattern, because life is about patterns all the time. Let's say you get on a bus and you go somewhere. You go to the seaside with your friends, you have a few beers, da da da. You get back on the bus. Which seat do you sit in? The one you travel there. So then minute patterns that we don't notice are absolutely huge. And it's about spotting them and addressing them. So these guys with their addictive personalities, pertaining to drug addiction and stuff like that, once clear, once neural pathways in the brain has been reprogrammed, that's what we do. They go on to big, huge successes in everything they want to do.
How would you... Well, two questions. One, for the person who maybe is in a little bit of denial in terms of their addictive personality, because like you just said, it's more than just drugs and alcohol. There's a lot of different things. But I think sometimes if we don't see a really clear outward addiction, we don't recognize that we are, as you said, really the underlying issue is that self-sabotage, not even necessarily the outward symptom of your addiction. How might somebody recognize that in themselves that otherwise they might not have the ability to see that clearly?
So let's take the gym, for instance. Now, obviously, the gym's very healthy. You're addicted to the gym. Listen, if you go on vacation with the family for family time because you're working a lot, and the first thing you do when you land the plane in France or somewhere is look for the nearest gym, there's a problem there. And you have to look at the problem. So anything that takes you away from the family place, either parents or husband, wife, and takes you into this other place where you can block this out is a kind of addiction. So there are healthy addiction, there are non-healthy addiction. Are you performing at 100%? That's the question. Are you performing 100%? Well, I don't know what that looks like. Are you living the dream instead of dreaming and living? Do you have everything? Do you have all your needs met in life? Are you as successful as you want to be? Whatever success looks like. For mine, at one point, it was getting my children back. I was the most successful person in the world. I thought money would make me happy. It doesn't. It doesn't. You know, I have plenty of that stuff. It does not make me happy. Give most of it away. That makes me happy. So just look at your life. I mean, people say all the time to me, they say, well, you can't have a good day every day. Says who? Who's making these rules up? Because I don't like it. So I get my mind programs my brain every single morning when I wake up. So whatever, so mind over matter is true. Mind, energy, matter, the brain. We can train our mind to produce into our brain the chemicals that's needed to have a fantastic and successful day. So what, again, also getting to neuroscience, we understand that we're not performing. I've never had anybody come to me, 8,000 patients and counting over 30 years, saying I was doing amazing, I'm doing great, and everything's good. Because 9 times out of 10, it isn't. But the stuff we're hiding, we're not going to tell anybody. We're not going to disclose that to another human being because, one, we think we're the only person going through that because we're embarrassed to tell somebody else. But secondly, you have to understand that this is the way the human mind and brain and central nervous system work. There's always going to be a default setting. And if you don't find out what that default setting is, again, not only will yourself consistently self-sabotage, but you will live a miserable life. And it's about being happy every day. It's about being content. Now, I am happy every day. I'm a 10 out of 10 every single day. But I do have better days than others, you know?
Sure.
Some are good, sure. That perspective. At one time, my living room, my lounge, my bedroom, my toilet, my restaurant was all on one seat in the middle of Manchester. One seat. That was all I did that day. I stayed there for 14 months. How, in perspective, can I get up out of my bed today, be bombarded by my two English bulldogs while my wife is making tea for me, you know, in this nice house that we created and traveled to work in a comfort? How? Well, the reason is you can't. So what people do is they feed off people around them. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. You know, oh, doctor, I've had a really bad day. And I always say this to them, was it a bad day or was it 5 minutes that you strung out all day? Because it is always the 5 minutes that we stick in that part of our self-sabotage. And we not only do we go through the day, but we affect others and bring them into that chaotic world. Some people
I love that. I'm going to repeat that again in case you guys missed that. Did you truly have a bad day or did you string out those bad 5 minutes for the rest of the day? I think therein is the self-sabotage right there in a sentence. That was brilliant. Yes. Yeah. So here's a question as a parent, because what has been, I can see that we all have some self-sabotage tendencies. I can also see that some by nature have more so than others. I see this even in my biological offspring. I have one who came out with just this inherent self-sabotage tendency. And she's young. She's not even that old, but we saw it from a really, really young age. And her gifts are her weaknesses, like it's true for all of us. But I'm curious, as a parent raising young children, any tips or advice that you have based on your experience as a parent with a child who has a tendency for self-sabotage even at a young age.
Hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, learned behavior and measurement plays big. Now, before I start, as parents, you are not to blame, first of all. It's learned behavior. It's a measurement. So parents can pass down depression to children and stuff like that. But it's just watching, you know. Anything less than nurturing is child abuse, as far as we're concerned. So lots of nurturing, lots of love, lots of, you know, attaboys. Make sure you always validate, you know, because people don't today. They really don't.
Yeah.
You stick your kid in front of a game for 12 hours a day, and the parent, oh, great,
yes.
Fine, Jimmy's okay. You show me a kid that's on a gaming console for 9 hours a day, and I'll show you a future addict.
Hell, yes.
We're still learning at that age. How many people out there, guys, have dinner at nighttime with the family sat together? Well, we all have dinner in front of the TV. That's not the same thing. How many people? It's like we have to start watching our young ones, watching who they mix with from afar. We don't want to micromanage them, but they will thank you years in advance after when we find out. So just you can turn it around. You have to look at the any kind of childhood trauma they've been through. And that's not, you know, people arguing, violence. It can be something minuscule, like a teacher at school. How many times have I told you, Jenny, you can't spell that, just give up on that. Oh, my goodness. You know, so we just have to look and watch and nurture. And we can, Jenny, really can.
Yeah.
But again, it's about patterns. We have to look for them. So there was a young girl in Manchester back in the late 60s, got snatched up the side of the road, 16 years old, blue eyes, blonde hair. The media went frenzy over this, a schoolgirl. And the manhunt was on. And nobody could find her. So they pulled back the manhunt. 9 months later, a police car was traveling behind another car in the country. And he had a broken indicator, back light. So he pulled him over. Now, back in the day, you know, no computers or anything to check if it's your car. But the police used to say, hey, what's in the boot? What's in the trunk of your car? And they said, well, a yellow jacket and a pair of boots. And he opened it. And there it was. It's obviously it's your car. So they said that to this guy, he opened the trunk and he found a stolen screwdriver. So they went back to the house to see what else he stole. And sure enough, there were drills, there were lawnmowers, there was everything. But one of the police officers noticed in another room, a box like 4 foot high by about 12 foot wide. And he said, what's in this box? He said, we know you've got more stolen stuff in this box. It must be really expensive. So he smashed the lock off. They opened the box and there was the girl that got snatched 9 months ago. She was bruised, she was battered, but she was alive, very much alive. So the police officer, the woman police officer, leant over, took her hand and helped her step out the box. She took a police coat off and she wrapped it around the young girl. What's the first thing the young girl did? She got back in the box. And that's a huge lesson for people, because even though it's painful, we stay in relationships far too long, especially when it's abusive. We stay in situations far too long. Recognize that box and smash it to pieces. That's the only way forward and way back from repetitive self-sabotage behavior.
Mm. We are going to dive into more of this expert advice on recovering from not just addiction, but from this self-sabotaging behavior. But what Dr. Rob did not realize he was signing up for is we're going to play a quick game of Would You Rather? Very simple, no stress. I'm going to ask you a series of questions and you can tell us which one would you rather. These are very serious questions. Would you rather be a ninja or a pirate?
Ninja.
What are you going to do with your ninja skills?
I'm going to
save the world.
Where nobody can see me and change the world one ninja act at a time.
One ninja kick at a time. Getting those bad guys. Would you rather dog or a cat?
Oh, a dog's, well, that's a hard one. Because I was grew up with dogs, but my wife has cats. So I'm going to go for dogs. We have two English bulldogs.
Now, if she wasn't watching or listening, Would you say anything different?
Definitely dogs for me. Definitely.
Yes. You said you have bulldogs. Is that your favorite?
We have two English bulldogs, yeah. So if I came back ever as a dog, that's what I want to be.
An English bulldog.
Yeah.
We've all heard it here. Would you rather cake or pie?
Cake every time. I have a sweet tooth that's bigger than any other teeth in the world. I'm sure I do. So yeah, yeah. I love cake. I absolutely love cake.
What's your favorite cake?
I would have to go for chocolate. And then there's a red velvet, which I would, actually give my house away for one of those if I was in need.
Is it because somebody's specific recipe or a restaurant?
Restaurant. Yeah, even though my sister makes great cakes. But just that intense.
The red velvet.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Now, this is actually a really controversial question. The icing, are you like the traditional, I want the full cream cheese, full sugar, or do you like the lighter whipped icing?
Hold on. Full on.
I want the red velvet. I want the full icing.
Exactly.
I want all of. I hear that. Go big or go home. Would you rather go water skiing or scuba diving, on the water or under the water?
Under the water. We love scuba diving. We love snorkeling. That seeing the things that you'd never normally see in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Where have you been scuba diving?
Spain, Mexico, Gibraltar, all that great stuff. Love it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I actually grew up scuba diving myself. Yeah. And I found that the places I would have thought would be my favorite often weren't. It was like, I saw like the most sharks in Florida of all places, as opposed to like Mexico or Grand Cayman or other places. Spain would be incredible. Okay, last question. Would you rather, at a movie, I probably already know the answer to this because you just sort of answered it. Would you rather eat candy or popcorn?
Candy.
Do you have a go-to movie candy?
Okay, here's a confession, guys. Don't call the police on me.
Confession time with Dr. Rob. Here we go.
We go to the store and get our chocolate and then sneak it in because it's like $100 million for a bottle of chocolate in there. So
absolutely. You have to like give up your firstborn.
Yeah. I mean, it's the craziest thing because it's not as if we don't have the money, you know, but it's just them little things from childhood.
Yes.
Don't take advantage of me. That's the only thing, you know?
It's so true. It's so true. It's like, just because we can doesn't mean we should. Yes. Have this catchphrase that we've sort of touched on already, but I love this concept. It's not a drinking problem, it's a thinking problem. And we've highlighted this concept of self-sabotage. So for those of you listening and watching, I think the humbling reality for all of us is that we have to get out of our heads that addiction is limited to just drugs and alcohol. And that all of us have an addiction problem of some sort. For the, you know, for some of us, we're just addicted to ourselves. It's that simple. We're just addicted to our own success, to our own whatever. But go ahead. Do you have something to say to that?
No, I agree. I'm agreeing 100%.
Yes.
You know, iPhones and stuff like that.
But what I would love to hear is, with your wide array of experience, you over 8,000 clients so far, and I'm guessing it's not a stretch to suggest you have worked with everyone from the stay-at-home mom with a smaller social circle to the celebrity with global exposure. I am guessing that despite the vast difference, even in social experiences or just simply external pressures, is there a common thinking problem or mental narrative that you hear across the divide, if you will? Is there commonality?
Yeah, that there is. Entitled with the elite, obviously, knock that out straight away from them. And the denial. I once in denial with somebody else asked you to change behavior. You know, it's really hard to do that because patterns and learned behavior, again, is what our life becomes. So anything outside the norm, anything outside that comfort zone, people don't like. So the complexo is denial and entitled, and you have to pass by that barrier. But there's so many, you know, global super household names, biggest movie stars and sports stars in the world that we bring to us, and the first thing they say, "I'm not doing that. Do you know who I am?" And unfortunately for those, we don't need his money or their money. We don't need. So if you don't do your toll, we fire you. I think we're the only company in the world that fire you if you don't do. So we knock that out of them straight away and get to the real problem. You know, it doesn't make a difference if you live in a $50 million house or you're paying $50 a month rent. You know, you've got to look at that person and what they're going through, because they put all, especially superstars, they put all these masks on before they go out. They have all these yes men around them, you know, and you've got to get out of that. You've got to, nobody guards come, no managers come, you know, we bring them over here. It's just them. It's me. And the first one I can mention, because he's passed away, is Eddie Van Halen. When he first called me, he was all on drugs and, you know, entitlement and you know who I am, which I didn't at the time. When he picked him up from the airport, I had no idea who he was, which he seemed a bit annoyed at. You know, it's like, I don't care who you are. And I don't get starstruck or anything like that. I just, yeah. You're here for me to do a job. You call me, let me do it. If you don't, shut up, go back home. I don't care. I take your $1 million. I don't care. I turned Britney Spears down for $1 million about 14 years ago back in Dallas. She wasn't ready. She wasn't going to follow the door. So go away.
Yes. Well, and what's interesting to me is I think, again, the humbling perspective is, like you just said, whether you have a ton of yes men, you put on multiple masks because you have such global exposure. I mean, don't we all do this to some degree? Like you just said, this is half of our problem, is we're putting on a different mask, whether we have global, you know, exposure or not, because it's safer. We're hiding behind that mask of maybe it's denial. Maybe it's the mask that I'm a really good guy, or I'm a really right, even though inside we're dying because we actually have no sense of self-worth. Yeah. And so we're putting on that mask.
It's a big one. The imposter syndrome, and if only people know who I really am, which is rubbish, really, because like you said, everybody goes through that to a certain degree. Nobody wants to show. I mean, even you look at the filters that are available now. I swear, the girl I met once for a job, I looked at her Facebook page. I didn't recognize when she came in the office because she looked nothing like. And that was interesting. It's like, why do you think you have to do that? Where it gets more. Why do you think you need more likes? Because I'm popular. Why do you? I mean, you just go down that rabbit hole of why. You know, when I go on TV, they try and do my makeup. Now I do it because of the camera shining. Especially up this big head, poor head here. I'm not going to go down that route. It's make me different. You'll never see any photographs of me with filters on, because who's the authentic person? If you're in your authentic self, then you're proud of yourself. You're confident. Everything you touch turns to gold. You're great. You're always giving back. You know, you're taking part in life. If you're living behind this mask, you are not going to take part in life. It's like if you can right now, I'm not saying you can because of what you're going through, get rid of that mask, step out into the world, and you'll see that more people love you. You'll see a few people didn't like you because who you were pretending to be, which is mind-blower when that comes true, and it always comes true. And then people start to love each other who they are, not who they want to be or who they want to perceive to be on the internet or TV. It's just like every single person I have met, including one of the biggest white rappers in the world, were nothing like they are on TV when they were in my house. They were nothing like that. And, you know, now you've got to do that to sell records, but at the end of the day, you have to come out and say, hey, this is me.
Yes. Me. And again, I would suggest that same concept is true whether you're working in a grocery store or you're trying to sell records. It's this idea of constantly having to evaluate, what am I sacrificing of myself in order to do X, Y, Z, right? Like, I'm a book agent. I can give a quick story where I had this book agent approach me. She wanted me to write this particular book. I wrote a proposal and I gave it back to her, and it was denied because I really wish the story wasn't true, but because it was too deep. And I was told that women want superficial and pretty. They don't want to think that hard. And so needless to say, that was not the right relationship, because It's literally called Imperfectly Empowered Podcast for a reason. We're trying to embrace imperfection in order to transform our lives, to take off the mask and step out with a sense of confidence in who we are and turn around the narrative of what is imperfection and who told me that my wrinkles are imperfect or even a blemish.
Love that.
I sure didn't.
Love that.
But it's that same concept. She's just trying to sell books. And what is devastating is she wasn't wrong.
Yes.
That women are buying superficial and pretty. And yet we're dying inside of insecurity because we can't live up to society's standard of beauty.
You've just hit the nail on the head. Most people that come out there look good, smile, you know, even corner shop people or movie stars, they're all going through some internal stuff that's killing them. One of my questions always, what are you going through that nobody else knows about?
Great question.
It's calm and, you know, it's like, but we set ourselves up for failure in the morning though, because people see us as in, when you stand 6 foot away from the mirror, the blemishes disappear. It's just like, we're losing our eyes there. So what we do in the mirror first, so we get close up, brush our teeth, shave or put makeup on, and subconsciously we're seeing all the blemishes. So what happens then is we go out to the world subconsciously with all our blemishes on us and we feel less than. So we have to put on some sort of act. When's the last time you were in the office, guys, and went, hey, guys, how are you? Nobody does that. So when you're looking at yourself in the morning, step away six feet, you know, and then just look. And that's what people see. And you'd be surprised how much confidence you have when you see who you really are, because that's the biggest thing in the world is we don't know who we really are. We cannot be our own measuring stick. We don't know how beautiful we are. We don't know how amazing we are, how attractive, how whatever it is. Me and my friend went back to England and was sorting out my mum and dad's property because they passed away some years ago. And my friend pulled this black and white photograph off. Now, we used to be bodybuilders back in the day, really big, you know, semi-professional bodybuilders. And he went, Rob, look at this. And he came over and it was this black and white photograph. And we were stood there and we're like, you know, doing all, I was, oh my God, have you seen how small my waist was? God, we were really attractive. My God. And he said, those were the days, Rob, weren't they? And I said, yeah, but we know those were the days when we were checking our photograph. So what if today is one of those days?
Yes.
And it's time to get to impress me. You've got to live today. You've got to see how amazing you are, how attractive you are. I always tell people to see them, how attractive they are. Our cats are lies, obviously. What nice jumper, nice shoes. Because we don't validate people one-to-one anymore. Dr. Robbie already knows how good he is. Nobody knows.
We just like them on Instagram.
Exactly.
That's our validation. Yes.
And it's crazy that these little tips in the morning, which I'll give you guys before I leave today. 3 things in the morning will change your day from tomorrow. It's like, I know it's hard to step out. I really know. Like what me and you do, is sometimes it gets lonely. Nobody knows. What? Are you kidding? No. If you're trying to change the world one person at a time, it gets very lonely. I've been in some really lonely places, you know, depressed and lonely because people are laughing at me and what I was trying to do.
That's right.
So, you know, it's about everybody needs. So there's a beautiful story, and it is talking about communicating with people. It just says, 2 words go, hey, morning. There's this guy, and he's walking to the Golden Gate Bridge, and he's going to throw himself off and kill himself. And so he did. And when the police pulled him out, he went back to his apartment, and he looked around. They found what was called a suicide note on his table. And this is what the suicide note said. I'm going to walk over to the Golden Gate Bridge, and I'm going to throw myself off and kill myself unless somebody on the way talks to me. How many people if you walk back past today, guys, on the way to the Golden Gate Bridge, how many people have you just walked past? You've got to talk. You've got to smile. You've got to, you know, add a voice. You've got to validate. You've got to approve everyone around you on a daily basis. And when we do
that. Well, it's hard to do when we're like this every day.
Exactly. Exactly. I've seen people walk into a lamppost and stuff like that because, you know, it's like.
So true.
A phone stamp. You know, there's a good restaurant in Dallas. What it is, but when you go in, you put your phones in a basket and they take them off you.
Yeah. And it's a challenge. I mean, it is a challenge. I mean, when I stepped away, I was an emergency medicine nurse practitioner. I worked in the ER for 10 years. And when I stepped into a virtual entrepreneurship, the challenge is real. It's like my job is on this device. And so the intention that I have to put into separating myself from this, that now becomes an extension of my body is. It does. It takes a lot of strategy.
That's when we need to start breaking our life. Imagine working on a railway line and doing that 24 hours a day. You would die within a few days or weeks.
That's right.
Same with the brain. When you're stuck in that virtual reality system all of the time, the brain starts to die. 300 neural pathways die every single day. What are you replacing them 300 neural pathways with? Is it rubbish or is it really good stuff like friendship, love? And, you know, you have to have time, guys. And me and my wife do it all the time, like 6 p.m. before I go away. And my assistant will pick up phones after that and be diverted. But we're not available. We're just not available till the next morning. And that has to be the case because I made up a great saying and people smiled at me. He said, if you want to waste 10 hours, jump on TikTok for 5 minutes. Because it's so true. What are you doing without wasting time? You know?
Well, and then we think about our kids. We just talked about the self-sabotaging nature. So now, once upon a time, when we came home from school, there was a break, right? And the social dynamics and the challenges that are inherent to our, you know, lives and growing, now we could set them aside and fill them with what's hopefully a nurturing environment at home. But now with the screen option, there is no longer any break in that social interaction. And so if you have that self-sabotaging, now it's like you're saying, now you're just feeding that over and over. And it's even worse because now people don't have to look you in the face to say what they're saying. Like at least they did at school.
If people behind the keyboard had to speak to a person, they won't say anything that he did. But the problem with today's society is you can get 999 likes on one, you know, growly face, and you're going to think about a growly face all day long. That's right.
I mean,
I have 5,000 friends, Dr. Rock. No, unfortunately, you are just plugged into the wall. Where's your social skills? Just don't have them anymore. And that's why people stay at home. There's no more real men walking around. You know, they're all hiding behind. And, you know, I think the world has lost, you know, the real man. The real man stands up and protects the family and protects the girl and, you know, does the right thing and steps out with confidence and, you know, stands when the wind is blowing, the rain, he stands there proud and tall. Like, you can't mess with me. But we're losing them guys, unfortunately. And that's a whole different podcast. But you get what I mean. You know, we're changing society one phone at a time.
Well, and I'm going to then take the other side and say, I think as women, we're actually losing the idea of, you know, in an age of female empowerment, I think we're more subdued than ever because of this filtered concept and this idea of the pressure to sustain this unnatural and artificial element of beauty. So it's a similar, like we've lost the true sense of confidence and empowerment because we can't authentically step out because I'm being told that what's naturally happening is not enough. One of the things that you say in your program, so for those of you listening and watching, you've heard him mention that the actual addiction element with drugs and alcohol specifically is a much smaller percentage of actually what they are doing, although they do it. But I just want to help highlight some of the approach, no nonsense, this is why they're doing what they're doing. And something that I loved reading about your program is one, you have clients recover at home. You're working with them in their home. And I think this is such a valuable point to make. Why do you find the benefit of helping clients recover at home as opposed to inpatient?
Well, of course, nobody's asked me that question. I love answering this question when friends ask me. What we found 10 years ago, before everybody became a telehealth provider, before Zoom became popular, it came out about 10 years ago. And what we found fascinating is when people come into the office, they're all dressed up, they've got a nice shirt on, you know, their trousers, and they sit there and they're sterile in this sterile office, and it takes you ages to get through to the real there. But what we found when we did a few virtual is, you know, they have a nice t-shirt on, but they've got pajamas and slippers on that you don't see. So you can get to somebody real quickly because they're open up, you know, they're bare, they're sat in the bedroom, whatever.
The mask is off.
Yes.
There's the mask off, yeah.
Oh. What a brilliant, exactly. I never thought about that. They're not put the mask on yet, but it's at the front door. So yeah, that's how we get them. So it's all about, you know, working that one-on-one, you know, changing everything about them, watching for patterns, clear up childhood trauma, uncover, discard of the past, which then becomes our greatest asset going forward, and learn. Because what a lot of people don't know is you literally can do anything that you put your mind to. And people don't believe this. And you can do this telehealth. People always used to fire back 5, 6, 10 years ago. Well, I can't be president of the United States. Well, let's forget your political views for a second. We had a business running the country with no political experience whatsoever. How dare you tell me that you can't achieve your dreams? It's just not true. So then I want to apologize to you. Why? Because somebody's put that thought pattern there in your head.
Yes,
great. Babies are born with two fears. The fears of falling and the fear of loud noises. The rest are man-made. Wait till your father gets home. Don't be so stupid. You can't go to college. Oh, you'll never be any good at that. All man-made. And you can get rid of that. But I tell you, for 96% of our work today, and we're a multi-million dollar company, is telehealth. And it blows people's minds.
Mm-hmm. And it does. It shows the power of step number one, which is, if for those of you listening and watching, if you have not gotten this, let's say it really clearly, is you have to be willing to admit that you have a problem. And in order to be willing to admit that you have a problem, it takes a level of humility. Are you willing to step out with humility and say, I don't have it all together? And for those of us who might not struggle with an obvious addiction, I think the way to help empower other people who do is by living with that same sense of humility ourselves, embracing this quote unquote imperfection and having these types of conversations where we can openly say, oh yeah, I had this experience. I like totally screwed up. That is going to help your loved one express their own need for a problem if we're willing to take off our own masks. So let's step number one.
be vulnerable. Me and my wife sit down twice a week at the table, no dinner, just sat down, phones away, and we go through this routine. Is when you make me tea in the morning, I feel wanted. When you you know, tap me on the backside, I feel loved. And it's amazing how that will bring your relationship closer and closer together. You know, it's like there's a new world out there, guys, and people want you to get into this pattern. Like, oh, that's the way marriage is supposed to be. Says who? Make it me and my wife. On marriage, we dance in the bathroom in the morning. It's crazy, you know, but people love our, when seeing our relationship, because we're genuine, we're happy. And, you know, it's just another step further than the mundane. So if you're at work and you're, oh, it's hump day, yay, or TGIF, it's like, get another job.
Yeah.
If you're sat at home with a wife or girlfriend or husband, and you're going through miserable stuff, you're not happy, get another husband. Well, it's not really that simple. It really is. Because in 20, 30 years, 40 years' time, and you're sat on your own in a home somewhere, an elderly place, and you're thinking, I wish I would have done this, I wish you would have done that. You don't have time, guys, right now. Date that girl, buy that house, marry that guy, do it today. And make that your own by being vulnerable with each other and close that bubble in around you. Don't let these naysayers in. You know, people are not on the same page as me that don't lift me up and vice versa. I don't want nothing to do with them. You're gone. Yeah, but he was a friend for ages. I don't care. Because that one little comment, especially when they wrap it up in a joke. Oh, Robert, I see you're getting fat again. Stop that stuff. He's out. I don't care. He's out. Watch for the guys that are not cheering when you win. Just be very careful, because there's always somebody around you in your family or immediate friend circle that want you to fail. 8,000 patients, always been the case. There's always that, find out who he is, get rid of them. Two people in this world, guys. People that love you for who you are and people that want to be you. That is it. After 62 years on this earth, I can honestly say that's my conclusion about everything. You know, hang around the people that love you. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. If you hang around with 9 depressed people, you will become the 10th. You hang around 9 happy people, you will become the 10th. It's as simple as that.
That transitions beautifully into this next question, because some of us listening and watching are the person struggling with the addiction. Some of us listening and watching are the loved ones of those people. And some of us are maybe the ones who are that need to be cut off. But the question I have, you have this incredibly powerful statement that says addiction is a family disease and therefore has to be a family recovery. And again, I'm going to suggest this is true whether we're talking a substance addiction or not, this whole concept of recovery and disease. You insist that spouses or people who live in the home need to be present for a certain amount of these sessions, for these experiences because it needs to be a family recovery. So the follow-up question to what you just said, I think, is how do we as family members or loved ones, maybe you're not in an immediate family, how do we live in such a way where we're holding in tension this balance of, no, I cannot control someone else's choices. Like, I cannot control this person's behavior. However, I can contribute to it. How do you speak into that person? And what do we then do as we create our own self-awareness, be able to fully take responsibility for how we're contributing, but then also fully take responsibility for letting go of the control?
Well, let's take a man and wife, for instance. Like, if a man comes to us and he's the problem or going through a disease, then we want the wife to come on 2 days a week. So he's 7 days a week, 1 hour a day for 90 days. Because she has her trauma. So what happens is when we bring the wife on, the success rate of the patient goes up by 42%. That's what we found. Because what happens, and you'll see this in treatment centers all the time, is you have a family day and the wife comes in. Okay, tell me about Johnny. What does he do? Oh, he does this. He does. When wives get on with us, okay, but let's talk about Johnny. We go, oh, this is nothing to do with him. This is to do with you and your trauma. What you're letting things get away. Well, it's not my problem. No. Well, can you explain to me why you let your husband come in when he's drunk and beat you while the kids are watching? Don't tell me you don't have a part in this. Now, whether you've got to pack your stuff up and go home, which we will advise if a guy doesn't want to get well, or whether you add, but this isn't about you walking around on eggshells. This is not about you adding all alcohol if you like a drink. It's got nothing to do with the partner. It's all to do with you. So we want to take it further. So we did tests and trials around people come back from Afghanistan and a wife in a violent, drunken household. And the PTSD for both of them were exactly the same.
Mm.
You are going through your trauma while you live in there, even though you don't think you are. Because if he continues to be violent in the home or continues to go down this pathway, he's going to die. And you're sticking around there, even if you haven't got children, but you're sticking out with the children, then all you're going to do is learn to teach them how a marriage is. Because let's say you get an 8, 9 year, 10 year old girl coming up through an alcoholic family where, dads, but just easy for me to say, the dad's the alcoholic, comes on once or twice a week, drunken, beats mom in a fist fight, and the child is watching this. This is what happens to that child. First of all, she listens for the key in the door. If the key goes straight in the door, it's safe. If it jingles around a little bit, run and hide. But then what happens is when she leaves the house and she gets a boyfriend or goes to college and moves away from the household, she will attract the same guy that ends up beating her and drinking himself almost to death. 99.9% of the time, to the extent that if she was to meet somebody nice who wanted to look after her, she would self-sabotage that relationship because it doesn't feel comfortable. So back to the girl in the box. And then what happens to that girl is she'll stay in relationship way too long. And then, of course, the guy will add that, oh, nobody will have you, because that's what mommy says. Well, we can't leave, we've got nowhere to go. It's like, it's really BS. You've really got to stand on your feet. It's not up to me to make my wife happy, and it's not up to my wife to make me happy. It's about me. It's an inside job. It's about me getting happy with me and contributing to our amazing life. And it's the same with you guys. And I don't care what situation you are in, this is 100% possible. Find out your identity. 90% of the people in the world have lost their identity, whether it be marriage or divorce. They've lost who you are. You've settled. Settle it, guys. If you're out there after a bad divorce, don't settle. Make a list of what you want in a man, whether you want to protect him or, you know, he protect you. So make a list and don't come away from that list. People settle these days. Why? Why are you settling who you are? Do you know how powerful you are? And you're settling.
We're too easily satisfied.
Right.
We're too easily satisfied. Yeah. Yeah. What would you say to because you mentioned this generational cycle. So again, just keeping it very simple. As someone gets older, and maybe they were related to someone with severe addiction, or they recognize maybe in some way, shape, or form that there is some element of stronger self-sabotaging tendencies. What can someone start doing in their own life to become one more aware of it? They'll say, like, I'll never become an alcoholic like my dad. I'll never XYZ like my mom, or fill in the blank. How can they, because initially right now, no, they might not be walking that direction. And yet, as you have said, there are underlying tendencies. How do you recognize that? And how do you start intervening in your own life?
Let's talk about your children, whether they be 9 or 19, it doesn't make any difference. Watch that behavior. Watch them for not turning up for dinner on the table. Watch for them canceling trips, making any excuses to be isolated. Isolation. Mm. So you've got to watch that, first of all. Let's say this to all
parents. Wait, say that again about isolation. Say that again.
Isolation kills us. You know,
isolation kills us.
We research on death row. We have a prison over here that kills people still, executes people. And we're allowed to go in, when I was working for the government, and ask people questions. And we find out probably 80-something percent of people that went into the chamber were insane because of the isolation before. So isolation kills us. The biggest thing a human being could suffer is isolation. So we have to make sure that they're not isolating. And then the biggest thing in the world, guys, is dialogue. That dialogue, talk to them, you know. But I don't want to go to his room and look around for any drugs and alcohol. Get in that room, guys. Because I'll tell you what, if he is and he's going down the line, he can't help it because he has a disease and you don't want to intrude on, you know, invade on his privacy, and then you find him dead 2 days later, who are we going to blame? I mean, it's not blame. You know, it's just like, get in there, find out. Yeah. Love and nurture him, because they're going to hate you at the time, parents. I did with my parents. You know, years on, when they got through that and they battled and become something, they're going to look back and go, Mom, thank you so much for doing that. I was lost. Because people who are 50 or 15, they get lost in this disease. And alcoholics do not have a choice, because the hypothalamus, which is part of the brain and survival, tells the alcoholic to drink alcohol. That's why I can go days or weeks without eating food or water. So it doesn't have a choice. So intervene, start dialogue, and then go to a professional and get help. See, I don't do this. To bring people to us. I don't want your advice to call my girls or whatever you need to do. We don't want you work. We're not selling our business here. We got enough money, thank you. But start inviting, start talking to somebody, guys. Somebody.
Yes. And I think if we can sum up what he just said, in case those of you are multitasking and listening and watching to this at the same time, what he said is get in there. And I think this is, as parents, what we need to start doing, regardless of whether we're at the stage where we're having to look for drugs in the room. I think the way to avoid that is, at this young age, I'm thinking of my kids now at, you know, 11, 9, and 6, it's getting in there and asking the hard questions as parents and being willing to hear the hard answers and starting to embrace that type of dialogue and conversation and be willing to have it. So that you set up that standard where there is room for failure, there's room for mistakes, because we're human and that's not what defines us. But get in there is the takeaway.
Yeah,
that I heard.
You don't want to offend anybody today. You know, it's get in there, because I'd rather you know, you get in there and then be mad at you for a couple of days and find him dead one day in the bedroom.
That's right.
You know, get in there, find out, confront, do whatever you got to do. You know, they're not going to hate you forever. It's only going to be a short period of time, but it's about saving lives. It's about doing the best. Stop turning your eyes. Stop leaving them alone for 12 hours on the computer. You know, monitor everything you can do without going too far. But if you have a son like 11, 12 years old, no such thing as privacy. You know, 13, 14, no such thing as privacy. You're there to protect and nurture, validate and approve. That's one of the jobs of the parents. And parents are not supposed to be saying that, because they're not. You know, it's could be a teacher, could be an aunt that's passing on this behavior. But yeah, just be there. Just be that loving parent, nurturing parent, you know, that brings them along. And you know, you've often heard, I used to say years ago, my guys, friends would laugh at me, so I stopped saying it when I was a kid. His mum became, you know, my go-to person. She'd never been my best friend, because that's stupid. Oh, my daughter's my best friend. Stop it. You're a mother. Stop that crap.
Yeah.
Stop each other. You're not a sister. You're a mother. Yeah. Take that responsibility, man. Nurture, protect, and guide. And you'll have a great relationship. And that's what I had with my mom until the addiction took it away. But yeah, there's a whole new direction, guys, that we need to go in. And I just hope that you've got something from what I've been saying. But what I want to say as well is, you know, it's okay for him. I can hear people already. Look at him. I've just Googled him in a big house. And then, listen, if you're at home, parents, and this is resonating with you, jump on the website, call the number on the website, my wife or my assistant monitor that number. They will talk to you forever about the problems. They're actually never going to cost you a dime. I don't care if you call up 20 times a day to my wife. She'll spend 20 hours a day with you, guiding you through the deal. But if you're at home, guys or girls, and you're sat in that horrible room and everyone's left you and you feel like it's the end for you, 214-600-0210 is my personal cell phone number. Send me a text and say, hey, I just listened to you on the show. I will text you back and then I'll arrange a 15-minute phone call that will change your life. I will pep talk 15 minutes. And you know, if it doesn't change your life, I'm going to send you $100 for wasting your time, because I would rather spend 15 minutes with you than hear of another suicide next week. I've always got my feet in the trenches. I reach for the stars every day, guys. But you see, I sold my children out for alcohol. I stabbed my wife 3 times one night because she won't let me finish my bottle of vodka. That's how far I went down. So start looking at the glitter that you see on the internet. And this is me, a once broken down man. Tried to commit suicide 7 times, and on 2 occasions it worked, and they brought back me. Just text me, guys, and let's walk through this stuff together. That's what it's about. Go, oh, do you want to sell your book on it? No. Do you want to sell your sin? No, I don't do this for that. I do this. So one person I'll go, oh my God, I relate to that. That's my dream. If you text this morning, whenever this comes, if you text me, you have just made my day. Of all the great things I get to do, flying in private jets with my, no. That doesn't come close to one person in trouble texting another person that's been there and knows a way out. And we're never going to sell you anything. Never going to sell you anything. It's just one alcoholic, addict, food, porn, sex, what, gambling. It's one guy talking to another going, hey, you know something? I think the way out's over here. Why don't you follow me?
Amen. And it's living with gratitude is really what you're doing, taking your own experiences, the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful, the messy, and saying, I'm grateful for all of it because here is what I am now able to do today. And I really respect the way that you are living that out. His website is robkelly.com, R-O-B-B, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y.com. And of course, as always, we will have all of these numbers, links, et cetera, in the show notes. Dr. Rob, it has truly been an honor. I'm pretty sure we could probably talk for 10 hours, maybe one day. But I pray God's richest blessing over your heart, your home, your wife. Truly thank you for the way that you are allowing yourself to be used to change the world. It's been an honor having you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And I can knock you off my bucket list now. Thank you for what you do as well. Thanks, guys. Hope you had a great time.
Thank you so much for listening to the Imperfectly Empowered podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Leave an honest review of the show on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think. Remember, your story matters and you are loved.